The Hamlet Podcast, Episode 10. Hello and welcome to this exploration of Shakespeare's King Lear, with me, your host, Connor Hanratty. By the end of the extraordinary first scene of this play, the stage has just about been cleared. Scene 2 begins with a soliloquy from Edmund. We met him at the very beginning of the play, while his father Gloucester was chatting with Kent about the state of the nation. Edmund doesn't speak at all during the remainder of that first scene, but I think it could be fascinating to keep him on stage throughout. If a production can find a way to let him hide in plain sight and observe the destruction of Lear's court and family, it's all the more thrilling for Edmund then to step forward, back into our view, having seen and heard everything we've been watching. The speech with which he begins this new scene is a great one. Thou, nature, art my goddess. To thy law my services are bound. Wherefore should I stand in the plague of custom, and permit the curiosity of nations to deprive me, for that I am some 12 or 14 moonshines lag of a brother? Why, bastard, wherefore base, when my dimensions are as well compact, my mind as generous, and my shape as true as honest madam's issue? Why brand they us with base, with baseness, bastardy, base, base? Who, in the lusty stealth of nature, take more composition and fierce quality than doth within a dull, stale, tired bed go to the creating a whole tribe of fops got tween asleep and wake? Well then, legitimate Edgar, I must have your land. Our father's love is to the bastard Edmund as to the legitimate. Fine word, legitimate. Well, my legitimate, if this letter speed and my invention thrive, Edmund the base shall top the legitimate. I grow, I prosper. Now, gods, stand up for bastards. First and foremost, Edmund rejects society and its laws in favour of nature, whom he will worship alone. By nature, he doesn't really mean flora and fauna and the nice things in the green world, so much as human nature, our innate characteristics. This is quite a prevalent Renaissance idea, inspired in no small way by Machiavelli and his book The Prince, the idea of personal ambition and achievement being of more value than one's family or inherited position. Edmund was immediately introduced to us as the illegitimate son, in very coarse terms, and so it's impressive to hear him decry society and all the demands it makes. Nature, he's saying, is all he'll respect or serve. He'll be true to his own desires and not worry about society or its pressures. He speaks directly to us, asking, "Wherefore should I stand in the plague of custom, and permit the curiosity of nations to deprive me?" The plague of custom, as he puts it, is the sickness or weight of society and tradition. The curiosity of nations is much the same, the peculiar or curious manners and habits of any nation, or indeed all of them. Human custom and tradition seems arbitrary to him, because it excludes him entirely and simply because of who he is, or who his parents were, or, more specifically, who his mother was and wasn't. This play is almost devoid of mothers. Neither Lear's wife nor the mothers of Gloucester's two sons appear in any way, and indeed, the three daughters of King Lear do not appear to have any children themselves. But because Edmund's mother is not Gloucester's wife, his whole life is radically different from his brother's more legitimate experience. And Edmund questions this. Why should he be overlooked and left out, limited by all this custom and tradition, just because he's the younger son of a different mother? He's only 12 or 14 months younger, but he's also illegitimate, as Gloucester said in no uncertain terms. But Edmund questions this too. They have the same father. So why must he be termed a bastard? Or indeed a whore son, as mentioned in the previous scene. Why should he be considered base when he's as well put together, as noble-minded, and as like his father as his half-brother? Why bastard? Wherefore base, when my dimensions are as well compact, my mind as generous, and my shape as true as honest madam's issue? Edmund questions how the whole court operates under the weight of traditional morality. Why brand they us with base, with baseness, bastardy, base, base? The they in that question could refer to all the crazy and unhappy people we've seen being so unpleasant to each other in the previous scene. If they are the peak of this society, Edmund makes a rather convincing argument that nature might be a better path to follow. He repeats base and the half-rhyme that starts the word bastardy so many times that we get a sense of how much it's irritating him. To be base, and therefore low, just because of one's parenthood, seems so unfair to him. He resents it, and resents all these legitimate people who can succeed more than he can because they are legitimate. These people are no better, he says, than us, inviting all the audience listening to side with him. Us, who, in the lusty stealth of nature, take more composition and fierce quality than doth, within a dull, stale, tired bed, go to the creating a whole tribe of fops got tween asleep and wake. In his enthusiasm here, he's saying that the illegitimate are more passionate and exciting, conceived by nature and desire and therefore made of sterner stuff. They have more composition and fierce quality. They're more vibrant and interesting people. Certainly more than those, he quips, who are conceived in a dull, stale, tired bed, got between asleep and wake. Remember that Gloucester opened the show with a comment about how much sport there was at Edmund's making. We get the sense that Edmund has had to hear this rather often. Perhaps it's a badge of pride for him to know that even if it was outside a legitimate relationship, at least his parents enjoyed making him. And now he's imagining that all these crowds of foolish, boring, legitimate people were conceived in such miserable, boring beds, in a fuzzy state between sleeping and waking. Shakespeare doesn't shy away from discussing such earthy delights, and all this passion makes us side with Edmund, at least for now. He's all but saying that exciting people are conceived in the lusty stealth of nature, rather than within the confines of tradition, and that he himself will happily stay exciting, true to his own nature. But lest we start to trust him too much, Shakespeare has him drop the mask immediately. He continues, "Well then, legitimate Edgar, I must have your land." Edmund shows his hand and announces what he wants. After this big scene of Lear dividing up the kingdom between his daughters, surely any young person would be left wondering what they might stand to inherit from their father. And for Edmund, the answer is nothing. Illegitimate sons were entitled to nothing. So, with nature as his goddess, he's going to have to earn or win or steal it for himself. Edmund is determined to get his hands on his brother Edgar's land and inheritance, and the key to this will be their father. Also, in scene one, Gloucester told us that Edgar is no dearer to him than Edmund. Or, as the bastard now puts it, our father's love is to the bastard Edmund as to the legitimate. They are loved equally. Except, of course, that custom will give everything to Edgar and leave Edmund with nothing. Because Edgar alone is the legitimate son. Having spat his way through all those variations of base, now Edmund chews on the word legitimate. Fine word, legitimate. well, my legitimate, if this letter speed and my invention thrive, Edmund the base shall top the legitimate. He has worked out this extended antithesis into a plan of action. Edgar the legitimate will be overcome, or topped, as he puts it, by Edmund the base. The idea of high and low and the inversion of status is central here, and the jarring image of the base being on the top is a clever play with words. It's not custom or tradition, but Edmund's own invention, his own clever nature, that will let him thrive. He's got a letter in his hands. Now, if he's been on stage the whole time, this might make it look a little too premeditated, but that's a concern for a production and its director to solve. What's in the letter? Well, this remains to be seen. For now, Edmund concludes his speech with, "I grow, I prosper. Now, gods, stand up for bastards." This is as Machiavellian as Edmund gets, standing up for bastards and hoping to prosper in this new world. It's a great crescendo and a rallying cry for any and all of those listening who are sidelined because of their parentage. What we don't know is just how base Edmund's actions are going to become. But that's probably good storytelling, since the play has laid down such a strong marker of being about parents and legacies and children and heredity. It's all the more interesting now to meet a character trapped on the outside of these traditions, and so we've someone to watch from there. As a little sideline, you might be interested to know that Shakespeare wrote King Lear fairly soon after he finished Macbeth, and that the sons of Malcolm, he who wound up King of Scotland at the end of that more Scottish play, were called Edmund and Edgar. There are some interesting parallels between the story of this family and that of Gloucester and his sons in the play, but I'll save them for the show notes just in case they might be considered a spoiler. There's enough of an echo to make me wonder if Shakespeare had the Scots in mind as he wrote this most British of plays, but it's hard to tell. Suffice to say that Edmund, Edgar, and Gloucester are the major subplot of our play, and what Edmund is going to try to do to his brother is pretty shocking. Next up, Gloucester enters and Edmund has news for him, but we'll save their conversation and that letter for the next episodes. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you weren't too bereft without an episode last week. I was deep in my Greek tragic foray to ancient Persia, and in the Irish language, of course, but I'm delighted to be back to it this week, and on St. Patrick's Day, no less. So, heartfelt greetings to you from Ireland today. I always appreciate your company. Go to Míle Maith, and I'll speak to you next time.